Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 171 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. With me, as always, is the stalwart and awesome Stephen Bishop.
Wow! What's up, listeners?
Tonight is probably, as I said in the blurb online, probably one of the most important podcast episodes you could ever listen to. Tonight we are enjoying the company of a fantastic guest. We've had him on before, before Christmas for the holiday season. It's a great time to have him on again before school starts, before parents start letting their kids off with credit cards, cell phones, all kinds of stuff in this digital
That's
age,
dangerous.
As well as the analog age. That's really what we want to talk about here, is the analog age. We forget about the fact that, like, mailers still go out. People make phone calls, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You really got to be careful with this stuff. So we've got security expert Arshan McCleskey, JD, on. He is from the UT School of Identity, and they put on some great stuff. We're going to talk about their three-day certification programs for security, all kinds of stuff. But before we do that, let's get into some of the news of the week here. As always, on the Dudes and Beer Facebook, we post all kinds of stories throughout the week just to spur discussion.
You like my typewriter?
Friends.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's fantastic, Steve. Nothing like a good old ribbon.
Yeah.
One of the big one that I want to cover at the top here is, of course, all of the kids in Thailand, as well as their coach, came out perfectly fine. The only person injured was actually a SEAL, a retired Navy SEAL from Thailand. We're sorry about him, but all of the kids came out safe.
Wait, he didn't get injured that bad, did he?
He died in the cave.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, he ran out of oxygen and they tried to resuscitate him and stuff like that in the cave, but it didn't happen.
Man.
So that was the horrible, horrible news. But the good news,
all the kids
to end on the good note, is all the kids came out just fine. They were able to do that. And it was an incredible swim. Like, you know, it
two
was
miles,
one of those,
dude,
9 hours.
Yeah.
9 hours. So somebody said it this morning. Imagine swimming from the Capitol building down Congress all the way to, like, Old Torf.
Oh, no way, dude. No way. That's scary.
Imagine that. Not just that, but in darkness.
Right. Oh, dude.
You know? And going up and down and having to follow a line and, carry an air tank behind you.
I can't even imagine.
A fireball flew across the Midwest on Sunday, leaving a brilliant green light. That was pretty cool. There are some great pictures online there on the Dudes and Beer group. Where is it? There it is. BBC came out saying that exoskeletons have officially been made. They are now available. So they promise a whole new future of superhuman powers, according to the article.
Nice.
A new spectral cloaking device could actually make objects invisible under realistic conditions. That's out of Space Daily. Of course, one of the big news articles of the week is that Starbucks will be ditching plastic straws by 2020. And I kind of made the funny quip of, I guess, their plastic cups and lids all of the clamshells make no difference.
So how are you going to suck up that coffee?
Well, we're going to start with the straw. it's going to be built into the lid, though. They're developing one that's, like, built into the lid.
Yeah.
So another one that was crazy smart technology sees through walls to track and identify people. That was pretty incredible. Yeah. A new law has been signed against websites for sex trafficking. We really need to have Billy Joe Kane on to talk about that.
Right?
And what the impacts of that law actually are.
Mm. No more back page.
And then, of course, God bless everybody out there in Los Angeles. We know what it's like to suffer through heat and stuff like that here. They're not quite used to it in L.A., but things have gotten so crazy there that there's, like, people without power. Like, I saw one of my friends whose wife is probably out having a baby at the hospital right now.
Whoa.
But they were without power. They were like, does anybody have AC? Like, I need to get my wife into air conditioning.
Jeez. What a heat wave.
So, Sorry to say that, California.
I didn't realize they weren't used to it.
And with that being the end of the news of the week, we would like to welcome on our guest, Arshon McCleskey. How are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. Thank you very much for having me tonight.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
We're so glad to have you on. We had you on, like we were saying just a minute ago and before air, you know, up around Christmas time to talk about identity theft, things like that.
Such a good episode, yeah.
And I was talking to you on air about how somebody I know recently got a phone call saying, like, hi, we're from the Sheriff's Department. We would like you to donate, if you can, you know, donate $20 to the Benevolent Fund, stuff like that. And she gave them their debit card. And, yeah, they sent a receipt from Cops, Inc. And it's like, man, no, that's not legitimate, you know. And, unfortunately, she'd gotten hacked up around Christmas, which was what spawned me to call you to begin with, because it was like, people need to know about this stuff before the holidays. People need to know about this stuff, like I said, before they cut their kids loose with, like, their first debit card, you know, to go to college, before they cut them loose with a cell phone account or an internet account in their dorm room, you know, the different things that can happen. Not just that, but even through mail systems, through phone calls, mm-hmm. like the one that she got, where I was like, you need to call your bank and tell them not to accept that charge, because guaranteed the people that got you before sell their list. You know, you can guarantee that, like, probably 10 out of the 100 calls you've gotten like that are from people that were connected directly to the people that successfully hacked you before.
No, absolutely. It's, you know, we're seeing kind of a, I'll say a resurgence of it, but it's just, it's a very easy way to compromise people is through, you know, phone calls. It doesn't take a lot of sophistication to do that. And, you know, it tends to prey on people's sort of their fear and in their empathy. I always say that's kind of one of the two things that these type of thieves, they try to scare you into providing their information, or they try to, you know, hit you with a story that, you know, makes you very empathetic to their cause, and that you want to, and those are two very, very powerful emotions. And so the other day I got a call, it went through to my voicemail, but it was from an automated system basically saying, hey, this is from the IRS, you have issues, you need to call us immediately. And I just started laughing, like, okay, I mean, I'm, you know.
Of all people to
this
call.
This just happened a couple of weeks ago. And again, terrible, terrible, you know, the recording was terrible. It sounded like it was, you know, basically made in a basement or in a fishbowl. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, again, even for me, the very first few seconds when you hear, and the IRS will never call you, let's be very clear.
Yeah.
They will never call you on the phone. But the first few seconds when you hear trouble, an IRS, what does it do? It evokes fear.
Yeah.
Like you go, oh, what did I, what, did I not file that income tax that I leave on? And then you have to kind of stop and go, hey, wait a minute. You know, number one, IRS doesn't call. And number two, you know, this is just a scam, and I need to, you know, recognize that. But a lot of people don't do that.
Yeah.
And they get sucked into the fear of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You really do have to go with your gut instinct. Like, if it smells fishy, there's probably fish around.
Exactly.
You know, and you say common sense, but like you said, it's very easy. And I own numerous websites. Of course, in order to do that, your phone number has to be registered with the website. So
it's out there.
My stuff's out there.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of sales calls. I get a lot of, my favorite one, quite honestly, was the Treasury Department calling me to say that they had a business loan for me. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure the Treasury Department didn't give out business loans, number one.
The Treasury.
Number two, they wouldn't call me. All right. Like, that would never happen. Whatever script you're reading off of, like, you need to go, like, make ham sandwiches or something for your job, bro. Because
that's sort of the third emotion that they try to evoke is, you know, there's greed. You know, hey, we've got this outstanding, you know, opportunity for you. So, you know, and you're like, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm gonna, you know, and you're sort of, the greed sort of takes over the common sense, you know, side of your brain, and you're like, oh, that sounds great. And, you know, more people, and I always find that people sort of sit around and, you know, kind of laugh about it to some degree, but then you're like, there's lots of very smart people that fall for this. Don't fool yourself. So it happens. And I've always been amazed at some of the victims that I've met that are just like very, very educated, very, very smart people. And, you know, they fumbled the ball, for lack of a better term, in this particular instance. And just, you know, again, let one of those emotional responses sort of take over and, you know, make some decisions they wouldn't have ordinarily made had they sat back and kind of thought about it for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it really does take some thought. But, you know, it's funny to me how still much of this, like we're talking about, is done through means of social engineering. It's not done through any means of electronic hacking. Of course, skimmers are a big issue, and you shared some great stories about that from your time as a fraud investigator with the Secret Service in San Antonio. Even recently, you were saying that you've reinitiated yourself with the sheriff's department, working in this same arena, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a good way to sort of stay relevant about what's going on.
Yeah.
In this field, and you know, what's amazing to me is there's definitely things that have changed over the years in the fraud game. I mean, obviously, you know, when I first started, I had a word processor. I didn't even have a computer.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a cell phone. We had one cell phone that was in a bag.
Yep.
You know, that we used, and we had pocket change and a pager.
Yeah, you paid by the minute.
Communication. Yeah.
It was like $1 a minute.
it's amazing, you know, how some of the technology has, you know, evolved, and we have very sophisticated, very complex, cyber hackers and network hackers and so forth like that. But some of the same fraud, you know, techniques have really stayed the same, and it's sort of, you know, again, you know, stealing mail, because it's still, mail is very prevalent out there. It's easy to get your hands on it. There's still very good information in there. And again, you know, making phone calls, and it's one of the most amazing things to me. And we've probably talked about this before, but I try to reiterate it, is that how much people are willing to provide about themselves, how much information they are willing to give. Now, again, if you walk up to a complete stranger and ask them for $20, the chances they're going to give that to you are pretty slim, right? They're just not. But if you come up with a pretty good story about why you need some pieces of information, you would probably get it, right?
Well,
people would generally hand that out incredibly fast.
Well, and it's interesting that you even bring up the somebody randomly coming up and asking for $20, because there is actually a case going on in Austin right now where there is a guy running around threatening physical violence to people in their cars, saying that, like, you've hit me on my bike, you need to give me $20, and like threatens to beat them up if they don't go to the ATM with him and like give him $20.
Yeah, it's
that's messed up.
There's also been a rash of people jumping into other people's cars while they're in them and saying, like, get out.
What a loser.
Like people like that obviously have some kind of problem to begin with. It's funny how, like you're saying, so much of this is still in the social realm. It's still out there. It's still every day. You know, it's one of those, if you can mitigate the circumstance, do it. You know,
absolutely.
Have your keys ready before you come out of the public place.
Yeah.
You know,
ask questions, ask why. This is one of the fundamental problems we have. And I, you know, in this society right now, is that, that we are just so readily willing to give up this very, very, these very personal pieces of information for us. And so, it's amazing, you know, why we don't value our identity, our assets, why we don't value them. Is it, you know, where did that, why is that not such, you know, why do we lock things up in safes? but we just readily hand over all this information, or we put it out there, or we just make it so you know, readily available to anybody. It's really a fascinating and, you know, and problematic mentality that we have. And one of the things that when I teach and when I, you know, I lecture and when I go out, is I'm trying to get people to start thinking of these things like the jewels, like the you know, important papers that they lock away. Think
you've yeah, got to like start your thinking firearms, of these things anything fast. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because, I mean, much like you don't want your firearm to be stolen in a burglary and used in a crime, because that serial number is tied to you intrinsically, you also don't want your ID or your credit card to be used in the commission of a fraud or a crime, because the first person it's going to loop back to before any other investigation is you.
And so it's just, you know, those are really, and you know, one of the things we've probably talked about this before, but one of the things I think is that we have sort of associated identity theft a lot with the theft of a credit card, because it's sort of a synonymous thing. And it is. I mean, you know, that's the number that's assigned to you. But there's a generally, you know, the presumption, okay, if it's compromised, then, you know, for the most part, the credit card company will incur the loss, and guess what? They'll issue me a new credit card, right? So that piece of identity is replaceable.
Yeah.
You know, but is your name associated to it? The whole, you know, is that really replaceable if somebody's out there, you know, pretending to be you and buying things and you know, reporting to be you? Is that really replaceable? That's a different story. That's much harder to recover from.
And that's just it. Once that damage is done, that's your credit report, you know, like that. And unless you can pay some service or something to prove everything, you're going to have a hard time with that not reflecting on your credit report.
Oh, yeah.
And that's an all too common problem.
That thing's hard to clear up.
Yeah, and it's just so, you know, and even if they're able to do that, you're still, you know, I mean, it's still somebody running around, you know, buying things, pretending to be you, and that's very difficult. That's a very difficult thing to recover.
Yeah,
that is not as easy as issuing a new piece of plastic or a new driver's license or a new Medicaid card or anything like that that you have. And so I always tell people it's always a lesson that I do and I do and I do. Where I have, you know, some of the speeches I do, I have people pull out pieces of ID, and you know, I kind of look at them and say, okay, well, this is basically your life, right?
Yeah.
And if you looked at these few pieces, it would be, you know, your driver's license, maybe a credit card, there may be a school ID or your work ID, you know.
Sure.
So that really kind of reflects the entire, you know, your life history down there. And those all can be replaced. They're all plastic. But the life history that you led, you know, that necessarily can't be replaced. And that's one of the things we really got to try to beat into the head sometimes of people, is this is really what you're losing, not just this piece of plastic that represents, you know, a piece of your identity or your physical being.
You know, and you really even have to wonder on a bank's behalf or anything like that, like how many times can something like that be reported before they ultimately just say, listen, man, obviously you were just a sucker and a glutton for punishment. We don't know if you need to have an account here anymore. You know?
Well, that's a really good point. And, you know, and one of the things that you've always tell people
is they're
that,
right.
You know, again, there's a perception, okay, the bank is always going to incur the loss.
Mm-mm.
That is true to it. That is true. Yeah, exactly. It's true to a degree until you don't, if most banks don't notice the fraud after a certain time period,
right?
It starts their ability, their responsibility starts to shift. Like, okay, if you don't report it in so many days, well, then now you're responsible for a certain percentage, and the bank is responsible. Then if you go further, then your percentage grows and the bank percentage is less. And then, you know, at some point, because they're like saying, hey, you got to have some, you know, skin in this game.
You've got to be proactive here. You know, I'll admit, I'm probably one of the only people I know that probably checks his bank account on the daily.
No, I do.
Yeah.
or at least every other.
That's it's just part of my morning routine. I wake up, I brush teeth, I comb my hair, make my bed, check my bank account.
Yeah. Even though mine says zero, I check it. You
know? I got to make sure that it's my zero.
Yeah.
That's attributed to me, right? Okay, just making sure that's still the case.
Right. Second. I gotta make sure I'm breaking myself, not somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah. And like today, I saw a friend of mine, and I can't remember the last time I've done it.
What's that?
Carry my social security card on me. I wouldn't carry that on me to save my life.
No, dude. You lose your wallet, they got both things.
Dude, it may be tough if they got your physical ID, right?
Yeah.
There aren't a whole lot of things that are give us your driver's license number.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But
just
about every major account requires a social security number.
Right.
You know? And once they got that, man, once they got the physical card, it's one thing to have the number, but now they got the card. You know, they could send an image of it, they could send a scan of it, and that's immediate verification. You know, of an identity.
So,
and how often do you see things like that? Physical crime in your investigations, what would you say the percentage was, Mr. McCleskey,
it was very high. I mean, it was most of the cases that we at Secret Service, most of the cases that we worked came from effectively mails being stolen and or some sort of an internal theft where they had an employee working in an organization which stole information, or somebody was able to,
social engineer
the organization and take whatever they wanted to. So that was where we saw a lot of the genesis of the crimes that we were investigating. And again, mail is just a very easy thing to get. It's still very prevalent right now. And, again, we really it's just outreach. We got to continue to tell people, be very careful with your mail, particularly your outgoing mail, because people still do write checks, believe it or not. And people, there are information that's in those in mail
that's
very,
even the pre-approved loans, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And, you see
and
those
the
burn
thing
them.
Is,
Just put a hole through the middle of it, man.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, that's one of the things we see at UT through some of the research that we do at the Center for Identity is that, you get one or two pieces of information, well, then it becomes a much easier thing to build that profile of somebody, right? You just need a couple of things. And when you get a couple of things, all of a sudden you start being able to get more things, and then those things lead to others. So it's sort of a spider web effect if you're able to get a few pieces, and, that's a kind of a good way to do that. And so we just were constantly trying to get out there and tell people to take their, I know it's a pain, but take their mail, particularly if it's very sensitive mail, take it in. So it's just, kind of be cognizant
feel free,
of that.
Feel free
and,
to throw your circulars away, but if it's in an envelope, you need to shred it, you need to burn it.
Yeah.
You need to do something like that. Even just putting it in your trash is no longer acceptable.
No, people dig through it.
And I have a hard time getting people to believe that people dig through trash. I'm telling you, I have spent, a great deal of hours of my adult life sitting outside of dumpsters and so forth, or digging through people's trash that I've found in a search warrant.
As part of an
You learn a lot.
Definitely dig through your trash.
You learn a lot about that person.
And that's just it. Like when we moved into our house from our apartment, my wife brought home change of address forms, and I was like, okay, yeah, let me see those. And I took them and I threw them in the trash. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, we will tell all of our creditors where we're moving.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
But I'm not filling out a change of address form, because by doing that, they actively sell your address, and that's how you end up with half your junk mail.
Right.
It's literally through the post office.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the ways they keep their door open, is to sell your address.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. And that brings up a really, another very good topic is that if we don't value the information, if we don't value our own information, how are we going to to expect anybody else to do that, whether it be, you know, any sort of organization that we do give that their job, you know, is selling our information out there. If we don't value it, you know,
who's going
why would
to?
They value mm-hmm. it? Which is why, you know, Europe is, again, another topic we've touched on. That's why the European laws yeah. are so much different, because they value that. And
yeah.
And I believe it's because the people value it that the organizations also and, value, because they say, hey, you know, we have to. These people are holding us accountable for their information.
Well, and let's get into a little bit of that. And because we were talking about that off air. I know we covered it in our last episode, but for those just tuning in and stuff, I would like you to explain exactly the difference. Because like I said before the show, it's not even a case of us being in the same solar system of definition of identity. We aren't even in the same galaxy of definition as Europe and Great Britain, England, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, they are just much more advanced than that. And that's why we have, you know, the GDPR, the new law that the European law or EU law that took effect in May. And, you know, and it's really, and if everybody keeps wondering why they're getting new messages about their privacy.
Yeah, that's why.
It's popping up.
It's ringing really through servers because, over there.
Yeah, it's because, you know, all these organizations are now trying to, are having to catch up with that. And they're having to, you know, do things within their organizational structure that they've just never had to do. And following the tenets of that, of GDPR, to making sure that they're complying with it, because some of the fines and some of the things out there that they're problematic if they don't comply with it are very, mm-hmm. are very tough, very aggressive. And so it is, you know, I'm hopeful that what it does is that it creates a mindset here that, okay, we now are going to really have to take this information very seriously. It is an asset. It should be treated like an asset. And I think now you'll start to see some of the mindset change a little bit on that. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for consumers. And ultimately, it's going to be tough for organizations, particularly yeah. very large organizations that are already in existence. But I think ultimately it's going to be good for them, because it's going to force them to look inside and say, hey, what are we doing with the data that we collect? Why do we collect it? Where does it sit? Who touches it? And what do we do with it? Who are we selling it to? Who are we providing it to? It's going to make that internal, kind of looking inside. And that's never a bad thing. Yeah, it may not be pretty at first, but it's never a bad thing.
Well, and it may not be comfortable. It may not be fun.
Nope.
It's not fun to read an end-user licensing agreement, but it's a good thing to do before you click accept.
Right.
Yeah.
Despite the pages of legal jargon and stuff like that. Like, I've had stuff banned on Facebook and stuff like that, and literally contacted them. And I'm like, I would like to know. Like, here's the screenshot of your rules. Like, here's your social rules. I would like to know where I disobeyed your social rules on my own group. On my own group, no less.
You got no response.
No, I got my stuff unlocked 2 days later. But
well, I think there's been this, you know, particularly over here, there was, again, one of the things I've seen is, you know, kind of, I've seen it as a Secret Service agent, and I've seen it sort of as a data, you know, privacy lawyer and as an instructor, is that there was, I think there was kind of this, let's grab as much information as we can, because we don't know if we need it, but we may not, you know, we may need it, we may not, but let's get it so we don't have to go back and get it. And then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, okay, man, I got a lot of stuff. Did I really even need any of it? You know, what do I need? And because if you don't need it, you shouldn't hold on to it unless there's compliance regulations that you have to, that you need to, comport with and so forth.
And it just came out that the NSA dumped like hundreds of thousands of calls, like I forget, not petaflops, but it was way more than terabytes of phone calls over the last many years, because they just didn't have time to process them.
yeah.
They don't have the manpower to do it. and to actively do all that stuff. But if I'm not mistaken, was there not also just a law passed saying that now there is necessity for a warrant to listen to cell phone calls?
So to listen to cell phone calls, it's been if you want to listen to somebody's cell phone calls, that's been a warrant that you've had to have. So what's kind of new and up and coming is there's a case right now that is looking at basically geolocation.
Geolocation
information. Does that require a search warrant or not?
Yeah.
And that's one of these things where technology is sort of advanced, because originally you're kind of pinging off the cell phone towers.
Yep. Yeah.
Try to triangulate where this person was. Well, as the technology's got better, I mean, some of these things are very, and you can really hone down
accurate
on where somebody is, and that kind of goes into the whole kind of concept of, again, 20 years ago, a phone, was that really part of your identity? No. I mean, it was just a hunk of junk that, worked about every, about every fourth phone call, if you were lucky.
That you spent a crazy amount of money to use.
Yeah.
That big old brick.
As opposed to, exactly, as opposed to today, where it's really, that's effectively your mobile wallet.
Yeah, you can literally buy phones at the corner store.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extension of you, and you're able to, so anyway, that's a real interesting, again, that's another kind of example of, technology moves sometimes really fast, and the law sometimes doesn't catch on as fast. We have to, it has to drag it along to catch up with that.
And that's kind of something that we did. I'm not going to say that we beat the dead horse, but that we talk about frequently on this show is the fact that technology advances so fast. Right. And I remember you saying it in the presentation where I first just fell in love with the information that you give. You are just such a wealth of fantastic information when it comes to security and personal security. It was amazing to me to see people that just did not get the impact and didn't grasp the importance, not just to their business, but to them personally.
Right.
It was just like, what the, this guy, and I remember I contacted you like that day.
Yeah.
To come be on my show. Yeah. No. I was like, I just saw you speak. You were absolutely amazing.
And what I'd like to know is there an age range of where the majority of that would be at? The ones that don't grasp it?
Well, that's a good question because, of course, during the Facebook trials, or not trials, but hearings, we saw the total generation gap
right.
and understanding not just of the internet, but of social media and how it works,
right.
how things are integrated, much less security.
Right.
And the concept of a